Hey everyone, I'm Brian Conley of Hunters HD Gold, and you're listening to Season 2 of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. This podcast takes a deep dive into what it takes to be a match director, manufacturer, sponsored shooter, or just an everyday shooter trying to win his or her first major. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. Welcome back to another episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. Today I'm sitting down with now, I think, five-time national PCC champion?
Six times.
Yeah. I apologize. So we just finished up PCC Nationals and he did it again. But we'll get into that in a moment. So when did all this start for you? When did you start shooting? You're not very old.
No, I'm 28 now. I'll be 29 in January.
Yeah.
So I started in college. I saw I had an AR-15 from when my dad got it during one of the original assault weapon ban scares.
Okay.
So my family's never super into guns or anything, not anti-gun or anything, but just didn't have them. We're in Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad was kind of a prepper, kind of mindset. Yeah, it's kind of funny, but
no, that's a whole nother story because I've known some people that do that and it's getting even bigger today. Is he still do that as well?
No, he actually passed away.
I'm sorry.
When I was 21.
So, 21. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about your loss.
No, it's okay.
Did you do a lot with prepping back then as well when he was doing all that?
No. When I say he was a prepper, it was more like he liked the idea of it.
Okay.
But he didn't, execute very well. He's just it's something he did for fun. Buy extra canned food or oh, they're going to ban these guns. We should buy one.
So he wasn't in the clubs and stuff
No.
You can get pretty deep into that now.
Yeah.
I mean, real deep into that. So did you, in Northern California with an AR-15, so that kind of changed a lot up there when everything was going to that scare, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was when I was a freshman or sophomore in high school, something like that. So, I think that was even before the bullet button thing, or maybe no, when we got it, it had to have a bullet button in it. Okay. And then they took that away later. But
what is a bullet button? I'm not familiar with that.
It's basically a swap out for the mag release. And you can, if you're out of state, you can convert it to a mag release. Otherwise, if you're in state, you can fix it. So basically pushing it doesn't do anything.
So basically it was designed not to be able to change your mags fast.
Right. It's to create a fixed mag that can be altered back to a regular mag easily. So
wow.
You needed a fixed magazine of 10 rounds if you had any feature mm-hmm. in California. So I don't really want to get into the California gun laws.
No, I get it. When you said that one thing, I never, I didn't get started till late. So I never heard of that before. So
basically you take flathead screwdriver mm-hmm. and you could stick it in the center of the mag release button and mm-hmm. unscrew it a little bit. So it backs out enough for you to push it.
Wow.
So if you take it out of state mm-hmm. And then you can convert it to a regular AR-15.
That makes sense.
And then back in state, you tighten it down.
Wow. So, is that still the law today, I wonder?
No, they got rid of the bullet button thing.
Wow.
So it's even worse now.
Yes, it is even worse, most definitely. So did you got a very, very intense competitive nature about you. Where did you get that from?
I'm not sure, honestly. The only other thing that I've competed in at this intensity, I guess, mm-hmm. was video games, but not at a super high level. I just play competitively online, try to get the highest ranking in whatever game it was. I played StarCraft 2 for a long time.
Right.
And they have a ladder system that's extremely similar to USPSA. There's ranks basically D to A and then master and grandmaster.
Mm-hmm.
They call them, bronze, silver, gold, platinum, diamond, master, grandmaster. Similar thing. I was working super hard at that game for a while. I think that's where a lot of my clicking speed comes from.
That's where the trigger finger came from.
Yeah. It never took me a long time to practice pulling trigger fast. That came naturally from the motion on the mouse, I think.
Right.
That
makes that sense. So you're doing it on a computer, not on a joystick, not on the controller.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I always played PC games.
Oh, wow. That is a whole nother thing. Did you ever compete nationally on something like that? Or was it all just
no, the biggest thing I did was go to, the local college where they held a LAN party mm-hmm. or we were near Sacramento. So up in Folsom, Intel has a headquarters there. And they did, Intel, I think the event was called like Intel Fall Festival or Fall LAN Festival or something. Mm-hmm. But in one of their big facilities, like they hosted a LAN party. So like everyone bring their own PCs, hook up, and they would do a small tournament there.
Wow.
I won one of those where there wasn't any huge competition in StarCraft, but right. And then I went to the UC Davis one time and lost to like one of the guys who was on one of the pro teams getting paid to play.
Was there money back then to be made?
No, it was just for fun. Like
just fun.
There wasn't the super high level, but that's if you were like on a pro team, like traveling around the world, competing in the tournaments. And basically tournaments are sponsored by big PC part companies like Intel, like NVIDIA, right. That kind of stuff. Yeah.
Is it a situation where it's kind of harder to get noticed in that area or arena to be able to be sponsored, or is it just something you never looked into?
Yeah, you not only have to be really good, but you have to stand out from the pack, because if you think about the barrier to entry of playing a video game versus mm-hmm. shooting, literally okay. everyone in the world has access to a computer or console or whatever, and they play video games.
Right.
So the barrier to entry is so low. There's orders of magnitude more people mm-hmm. trying to get good at it than in shooting.
And what year was that again in the video games?
I played it basically through middle school and high school. Like I did a lot of Call of Duty 4, and then basically once high school started, so that would have been 2000, what the hell, like 9, 10, 11,
okay,
something like that.
Because back then, yeah. you know, computers, who usually had the best computer had the best speed, right? In some situations, in some games, right?
StarCraft 2 was pretty well balanced for
was
like
it really,
even, yeah. It's not super hard on computers at all.
Okay. I remember computers back in the late 90s. And if you didn't have the RAM and all the other stuff, you were done.
Oh, yeah. My dad was super into that stuff. Like the original Red Alert, Command and Conquerors, those kind of games. And we would like upgrade computers every couple of years. Yeah. And like, and that's back when it wasn't mainstream. Like now, right. you know, it's mainstream to upgrade your computer. But
right.
back then it was super cool. And
because I guess
not many people did it.
When they get that, the reason I'm asking this question, because it just intrigues me for a second. That's kind of how I do the show. Do they PC games now, mm-hmm. do you think they regulate what you can have on your computer? Like kind of like what we do in the shooting sports in certain divisions, or is it all console gaming now where they don't regulate? Cause there's some computers out there you can get with 3-4 processors, just all kinds of things to make your experience more faster, right?
There's no benefit past a certain point.
Okay.
So like
I did not know that.
The race right now, it's all, I don't think there's any limit in any game, but there's no the technology is limited mostly right now by graphics cards and monitors.
Okay.
So you've seen like recently
the refresh rate
of monitors is going up, and like Asus and Acer like always pushing boundaries, and they have like 360 hertz screens now.
Right.
Most gamers like playing at 1080p. Okay. So like not that many pros in the pro scene have even pushed up to like 1440p or 4K yet.
They haven't yet.
Yeah.
Wow. So I would have thought they'd been way advanced on that. So.
It could be in certain games, but a lot of the really competitive games are fairly simplified, especially for a spectator experience. So there's not like flashing lights and super great graphics ever. That's awesome for like your single player, like adventure story game kind of thing, like Last of Us or what was the other series, like Uncharted, some game like that, which was like basically an epic movie that you play through.
Right.
Those are the ones that really push the boundaries of graphics and everything. But competitive games are usually simplified enough that people can run them really fast on a wide variety of hardware.
Wow. That's so cool. Thanks for sharing that with me. Cause I didn't have any idea how that was working. Cause my son did that a little bit when he was, you know, 20, or he's still 20, but he didn't get into I didn't have all the time to ask him everything that was going on with the details of that. So that's good to know. So you get your AR-15 and you just went out shooting for fun at a gun range.
Yeah, literally like 4 years, I would just go out a couple times a year and sit at the bench and like shoot some groups on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was like the fun that I had with the gun.
Right.
You know? So
were you working on like double tap or anything, or did the range?
No.
Did the range allow you to shoot fast?
This is actually at Sac Valley. So I didn't know at the time, but when I was shooting at the benches there, you know, not like more than 50 yards to my left was the action shooting side.
Right.
But I never knew what events went on there. I didn't learn about action shooting until I was at UC Santa Barbara, was kind of just looking at more interesting things to do mm-hmm. with my AR.
Right.
And I found 3-Gun. And so like YouTube started like giving me three gun content and everything. That's kind of how I found all the videos of people shooting. Wow. I was like, I want to try that. So
holy cow. What was it like going, who'd you ask about when you got started doing that? Was that something you just kind of figured out on your own or reach out to people? Or what, you know, how do you find something like that when you don't know anything about it?
No, luckily there were a few people, at the school at UC Santa Barbara already did IDPA and USPSA.
Okay.
So, Brian Lum and Dane Lazarus, they were like the two guys who I started shooting with a bunch. They took me to my first ever shooting on a timer event, which was the old IDPA classifier.
Right.
That was my first time ever shooting on a timer. And I borrowed a Bell and Glock and everything.
Nice. Yeah. What do you recall what that was like when you first experienced that?
I'd watched a lot of videos on it. So I knew what to expect and everything.
Yeah, but when you're there, you're barring this, you're barring that, you know, you're here, you know, there's a timer going off.
Yeah.
How did you handle the intensity to control yourself when that timer happened? Or did you? You just went at it.
There wasn't any pressure. Yeah. Okay. When the timer went off, I just like drew and like tried to do my best with my limited fundamentals at that time.
Right.
But I was just shooting a classifier just to try shooting on a timer. Like I wasn't even competing against anyone. They took me to the side and said like, hey, we'll do this while the IDPA match goes on.
Oh, okay. So you're doing something besides the match then.
Yeah.
Were you itching to get to the match though?
No, I didn't shoot the match. Like I just came out that day for classifier only to try it. And that was my first and last time shooting IDPA.
First and last time. The fishing vest didn't fit, huh?
Yeah. I didn't wear one for the classifier either. So I'm still clean.
Still clean. You can catch me with a jacket. That's awesome. So, you know, you do this and then, you know, what, you know, three gun came after that.
Three guns hard to get into.
Okay.
But I like those are the videos I watched, so eventually I wanted to get into it. I went and bought a CZ 912. It was the first shotgun I bought. Like I found it at a local gun store. Mm-hmm. Then I had my AR, which was a stock Stag 2T, I think. Okay. Like 7-inch quad rail handguard, you know, mil spec everything. And then the handgun was the first like real competition gun I got. I got a Shadow, one of the original Shadows, where Dane and Brian helped push me in that direction.
Right.
Because they were at the same time kind of learning about what was best. And Brian was shooting a Beretta like Steger was winning with, and Dane had his Glock 34. And those guys both were like, hey, like we've seen the Shadow, like it looks pretty awesome. You know, CZ kind of designed it for competition.
Right.
It's got a great trigger and everything. So I found one of those. That was the first handgun I ever got.
Right.
So I got that about like, I think it was like October before I turned 21. So I was 20 in October. And then I got the gun, like dry fired with it a bunch. My first ever USPSA match was in Reno on my birthday on January 4th when I was 21. So that would have been 2015.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Who did you decide on your own about the CZ shotgun? For competition, because that's one of those things I didn't know.
It was an affordability thing.
Okay, because I didn't know CZ had, you know, stuff that was made for competition back then. So that's kind of cool to know that. So
no, it wasn't for sure. Like it was kind of that or the Stoger M3K, which was more expensive,
right?
Or like I didn't know about it,
right?
The CZ was only like I think it was like $500 or $600, and I did all the loading port myself and everything.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Who taught you how to do that? Just
YouTube. Yeah.
That's how I learned how to reload, you know.
I didn't do it very well.
How long did you keep the CZ shotgun?
Probably about 2 years or something.
Really?
Yeah. Like I shot my first multi-gun match within a year of starting to shoot.
Right.
And it was like a sectional, like bigger one day match out in San Luis Obispo.
Okay.
It's slow stuff.
I've been to that range for a beautiful range.
Yeah. It was a very difficult match to start with. Like the very first stage that I shot there had us, you know, getting our handgun out of the glove box and like shooting stuff left and right out of a car, like do your seatbelt, get out, like go to the back with the rifle. And
oh, wow.
That kind of inspired some of the stage designs that I did for PCSL
and recently too. That range in California can stretch out some distance as well. How far were you shooting back in? You remember how far
there was a stage where they threw up a roof and shooting out the back of a pickup truck that had like some siding on it for bracing, but I think we went out to like 300-400.
Wow. Was that the Hogue range back then?
Yeah.
Okay. So back then,
The Hogue range.
I knew Hogue has been that range for a while. I didn't know how long they were with them. That's cool. How'd you finish on your first three gun match?
I'm not super good.
Okay.
But I really enjoyed it. And I finished like I shot everything.
So that was kind of the light bulb saying, I want to do this with that match.
I knew I wanted to do it
before. Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. to go into a situation with that many guns, that many things, because you didn't have backups back then. It was what you ran what you had, and that was it. So,
right.
Wow. And the shadow you had based on, you said you saw Steger using everything else, and that changed that game for you getting that gun as well.
He was shooting Beretta at the time, and I think he had just switched to Tanfolio, maybe.
Yeah,
like about that time that I got the gun. So I didn't know anything about the culture, like, you know, argument versus like striker fire, double single action, that kind of thing.
Right.
It was a good gun, and I got pretty good at production with it, because you can obviously shoot a lot more handgun matches than you can three gun.
Mm-hmm. Was there a lot of sponsored shooters back then that you were influenced by as far as in the three gun world that was kind of like, you know, this is where I want to, you know, be, or are you just kind of there as a hobby kind of thing?
I mean, I saw a lot of videos of like Taren and Griffel and mm-hmm. Bob Vogel and all these people on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to shoot like they did. And Taren actually came out pretty frequently to our local range there. Not really local, it was like an hour 20 away, but
okay.
It was like the closest one that did real matches.
Right.
And that was Piru, California. Now it's called California Tactical Academy.
Okay.
But back then it was, there were a few clubs. There was ISI Speed Gun, which was like separate from USPSA,
right.
One section of the range. Then there was Deadwood Boys and X3, who did monthly USPSA three gun and a rifle only match that they started up right about the time that I started shooting. And actually at the first rifle only three gun style match, Bob Vogel and Jessica Hook and Taren Butler were out there, and these are the guys that I'd seen on YouTube. So I was like, yeah. Wow, this, oh, and Dynamic Pie.
So, okay.
And Fong from Superset CA. So that was the first time I met him. So I got to squad with Vogel, Jessica Hook, both Britt and Cyrus, Britt Cyrus and Mike Barnes.
How was it Dynamic back then? Pie,
and then Fong from Superset CA.
See, that's so cool. What was it like back then when they saw somebody new coming on board like that?
No, it was great. Everyone was super helpful. Like that, I have videos from those matches, and like I was just, you know, you can just watch me and see like, oh yeah, this is a guy who's like wanting to be good, but was obviously still figuring everything out.
Right.
But everyone was helpful.
When you heard their cadence mm-hmm. of the shots being fired and how fast it was,
yeah,
did you try to mimic that when you were shooting as well? Were you still trying to shoot your own game, or was that cadence in your head of already the trigger speed?
The match that I shot with them was a 2-2-3 match. And by that time I'd already built a new competition rifle.
Okay.
So my three gun rifle was shooting awesome. It was, like I built it with JP parts, and then I went for budget options, like where I could save some money.
Mm-hmm.
But I was already able to split pretty fast at that point. So what did I start with? I started with the Geissele trigger.
Yeah.
Same one I'm shooting now. I've kind of gone full circle on that, but, like there wasn't really anything mechanically holding me back. So obviously just, I wasn't as accurate, I wasn't as efficient, all that mm-hmm. stuff, but I was trying really hard to be fast. Yeah.
Cool. So the splits were there pretty much from the beginning, you think, because of the mouse back on the computer, or was it a controlled recoil thing? Or what was that like? Cause you know, when you have fast fingers, I get it, because we had stand up arcades back when I was doing a long time ago, when I could dominate in track and field because I could get my two hands going together running on track and field on that video game. So I understand that concept, but when it comes to a mouse, one finger, and then the trigger being one finger, of course, you're not mm-hmm. slapping it with your entire hand like you're on a video game back in the day.
Right.
What kind of, you know, did you take any training from anybody back then early on to learn how to control that? Or is that something you just kind of taught yourself?
Yeah. And the three gun rifle that I started with was so easy to shoot anyway. Like it already had the JP light bolt carry group in their brake and everything. So,
right.
There basically no recoil on those, less than PCCs for sure. So wow. I was just, I think I was pretty fast from the start, just pulling the trigger. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Who was the very first one to notice you as far as sponsors and stuff like that back in the day? Was there anybody that kind of started approaching you early on when you was out there in California?
I mean, like I introduced myself to Taren and mm-hmm. like I met him pretty early, but I didn't get sponsored by him until like pretty recently.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I mean, we talked about it. I wasn't really interested in like getting sponsored
early on. That wasn't kind of a thing looking forward to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just trying to get better, and I made a little money and volunteered at the range. And then eventually got to the point where they just had me come like during the week, mm-hmm. and I would like build stages for USPSA or multi-gun, do like two or three stages on one day during the week, and then practice afterwards.
Oh wow.
And then finish the match the next day, then practice afterwards, and then then come back and shoot on the weekend.
Were you a range officer back then as well?
No.
Okay. So when you built stages, did you have people that went behind you that said you can or cannot do this, or what that, you know, what that looked like based on the rules?
I'm not sure if I did USPSA stages. I probably did, but they weren't super concerned about that stuff. I never did anything that was illegal for USPSA.
Right.
But the multi-gun stuff, obviously we didn't need to check it or anything.
Right.
I think I've always been pretty good at stage design, just watching what works and like just adapting it in different ways. Because
okay, pretty much everything. Explain that.
Yeah, like for stages, everything's been done, right? Like we only have a few types of targets to shoot. We only have these walls, these fault lines, and everything. And there's only so many orders of targets you can put out there. But everything is so nuanced with how they fit together that it always feels new. Unless it's like lazy stage design where you just, you know, put boxes out and say shoot from here.
Right.
But it doesn't really take that much to take a good stage and take elements from it. And maybe there was like a 10 round section that you really liked here, but you're gonna combine it with a totally different style over here, and it just it's something that I don't really have to spend much time agonizing over. Like it kind of comes naturally.
Well, that's pretty cool. So nobody really trained you on that. You just kind of did what you saw then.
Well, I had awesome examples from the people who were setting up there already. Like those are some of the most fun matches I've ever shot. And in my opinion, the three gun match, the X3 used to put on with Sam Houston and John Barrett and Chris Carpenter and everyone out there. Mm-hmm. They were really good examples to learn from. And like the stages are so fun every time. So, So I had really good, really good examples.
So you've been through a whole loop of shooting to see it like, hey, this was great. And then now we're, you know, going through situations where it's okay. More people are voicing their, you know, stuff on social media, and you're seeing stages get back to good again, great again. So you've seen a lot of, you know, different stages going on throughout your career then, I take it, correct?
Yeah, definitely. And more styles of shooting too. Like Area 4 this past year was a good example where Chad Stanton did all the stage design. I really, really like his stage design. It's like you can just tell like, oh, like this is a Chad stage, like very option heavy and but also very like regimented, like a lot of right angle walls and easy to understand, easy to break down, but still a lot of options, hard to execute. But the whole match was like that style. Mm-hmm. So it almost felt like the stages were like repeats of themselves with little tweaks at some point. Obviously there were some that were different, but then like you go to Extreme Euro in the Czech Republic, which is a 30 stage 3-2-1 IPSC format match.
That's right.
And they have an awesome style too. But the last time I shot it in 2021, was it 2020? It might've been 2020, but I think 2021, the stages started to get very, yeah, like they just all blended together. Like all the short courses, there should be 18 of them.
Start looking the same.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or 18 or 15. I forget.
It'd be three.
Yeah,
15.
So, they were all like super, super similar. So, in my opinion, a great match, like individual stages can be designed well, but a great match needs to have all the stages, a variety of styles, and they all flow together really well, where it's not like biased super hard toward one skill or the other. Like it's a really complete test of everything.
Right. So you went from three gun. Mm-hmm. Did you go straight to pistol by itself, or what was next after three gun?
I never really went from three gun to anything. Three gun was just harder to shoot. So I would shoot like one or two big matches a year, like the Nationals out in Vegas or Pete's matches, Surefire and the Expedition multi-guns.
Right.
But we had the monthly rifle only match, which was awesome. That's kind of where I got skills with the rifle, shooting that one and practicing for it. And then I would shoot production with my Shadow.
Right.
It was a great gun to start with because I could run it in three gun or production. Mm-hmm. And in three gun, it really wasn't a disadvantage. Like it's basically a single action limited gun. So I shot everything in the start, a lot more handgun and rifle than shotgun for sure.
When did PCC come into your world to interest you? When was that,
Mark? The first year it was out.
The very first year.
Yeah. Okay. So I started, like, ever since I, you know, messed with JP build mm-hmm. on my original, like, competition rifle build.
Right.
I was super into tweaking stuff and just trying things out. So when PCC came out, I got one of those Glock mag lowers, like one of the cheap ones that were around everywhere. And then I built a gun around it with parts that I could find, and figured out how to tweak it and make it run and make the mags run and everything. And I already had a lot of practice with rifle from 223.
Right.
And we had a classifier match coming up. So I built a gun. I think I finished my build on Tuesday. I practiced with it on Wednesday. I dry fired Thursday. And then I shot with the staff on the classifier match on Friday. Mm-hmm. And I barely classified GM, like 95.13% in PCC.
Wow.
And then on Saturday, I staffed it and ran other people through the classifier.
Wow. You were your own gunsmith.
Yeah.
You did everything yourself. Mm-hmm. There's always been a tinkerer like that.
Yeah.
When did that start back? Just tinkering. Is that something?
Probably like Legos and
from the Lego. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. No, that makes sense. That's why I was asked. Cause when you start doing stuff like that and you're taking stuff that JP sends you and you're giving them feedback, are they listening to feedback from you on how to improve certain things at this point? Or are they just kind of walking with you saying, you know, just what does that look like through that process working with a manufacturer when you start tweaking their stuff?
Yeah. JP has been awesome. Actually, most of the feedback that I've given them from getting the JP5, like mm-hmm. they're already on top of improving that aspect of it.
Right.
One of the things I think it is coming soon, but they offer a 90, 80 and 70 locker now.
That's correct.
And I think a 60 or even maybe like 55 or a little bit more locking force
right.
would be awesome for a lot of high power factory loads.
Okay.
But other than that, like, I don't have any complaints with the gun. It's pretty much the next step in.
You built your own PC before the JP5 though, right?
So I worked with Aaron Brecky from Brecky Custom on the ideal blowback setup that we could come up with.
Okay.
And it's if you know the TR9, like obviously like a lot of people are shooting the Terran gun now.
Yes, that just came out. Yes.
Yeah. So we were running that setup and Zach and I were working on it like years back, way before the TR9.
Really?
Before Brecky Custom gun yeah. came out too. So
yeah.
Like we were messing with the hydraulic buffers and short stroke and learning like what was reliable, where you need to feed ramp, all that. So
giving that feedback to the company?
No, just building it ourselves.
Just building yeah. yourself, learning what you could learn from.
Yeah. So Aaron wow. Brecky, he was our roommate for quite a while. We met at TPC.
Okay.
When I went out to train with Ron Avery and become yep. an employee there. So Aaron joined at the same time. So after about a year of that, I broke off and started doing my own training, and Aaron stayed a little longer and then started Brecky Custom.
Right.
And, and he helped me machine some of the parts, like the comp and like the handguard cut back for the gas and everything.
Right.
So I was running basically a prototype of that exact setup, just not nicely made. Like we got Smoke Composites make a nice handguard. He made nice comps and everything.
Smoke Composites makes some nice stuff. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, John's awesome.
I've never met John, but I'd love to one day because I've got some light stuff on some of the guns I have. It's just nuts how stuck the carbon fiber is.
You should visit his shop. Like, they have an awesome history. His dad worked on composite warhead caps.
Really?
For like lightning, like the front of missiles in like World War II and stuff. Like,
right.
Yeah, like super huge legacy with that company. He also does like surfboard and sailboat parts too.
That's big money.
Yeah. Like all carbon fiber.
This gun stuff's nothing compared to that.
Yeah.
That's big money. Wow. So he's got the history. That's where that came from. That's pretty yeah. cool. Is he close to you out there in Utah in that area?
No, he's in Northern Nevada. So
Northern Nevada?
He's yeah, near Reno. Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. So when you hear about PCC mm-hmm. as coming in as a division, and you hear the other side of all the pistol shooters complaining that they're bringing a rifle to a pistol match kind yeah. of thing. How'd you feel about that? Because you were excited about PCC, right?
I was always above the memes because, like, if anyone ever made fun of anyone for shooting PCC, they're mm-hmm. like, oh, except Max is actually good. Like, that's because, like, from my first Nationals win, I guess, okay. like, okay. I was kind of above that criticism.
Okay.
So it never really affected me, I guess.
That's funny.
But yeah, I never really paid attention much to it. Like, I don't.
Well, really you've heard. I've heard people say we have to design stages thinking about this. Have to design stages thinking about that now, and it was just a big change. And more than anything, you know, people. A lot of people don't like change. That was the biggest thing, I think.
I don't know. I still don't really agree with that. That stage design had to change. Like, you get the people who are bitter about it, who used to win overall in open.
Okay.
When if you looked at major matches, the first like 3-4 years of PCC. I didn't even come close. I was losing carry optics, guys. Like Max Michelle was crushing us.
Right.
There's no, like in my opinion, there's no reason to worry about PCC like taking high overall unless you were just, you know, complacent and winning high overall at your local match and open
right
all the time. And then that, I don't know.
That makes sense. But you don't think stage design should worry about what they're shooting? But if rifle, pistol, doesn't matter. Just design a stage.
No, I mean, like if you're designing a good USPSA stage that will work for production through open, mm-hmm. like you would at a local match, ideally.
Right.
I don't think you have to change it for PCC.
Were you? Well, let's jump to present real quick because I want to attack asset because you just said something. What did you think about when they were putting PCC and production together? Was that something that kind of caught you off guard? Well,
they announced it last year,
right? Right.
I don't like it. I don't think it fits very well. And obviously, you know, we saw this match. It could have been done a lot better, I think, if we had been paired with a different division.
Right.
I think it was probably a pretty good production match here, like difficulty wise, but mm-hmm. it was kind of easy and boring for PCC a lot of it. Actually, Zone B was really good.
Okay.
Interesting stages there. And there were a couple. Zone A was probably my least favorite.
Right.
Zone C had, I think, two stages that I like 20 and 16.
Okay.
But
you think based on being teamed up with production just made the match not as interesting?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Because I know next year in 2023, they're going to do it with PCC and open.
Yeah, I think that's where it should be. That makes a ton more sense if you're in combined divisions.
Right.
For sure.
Because we've seen some PCC matches before. Where, you know, you've had swingers out to 60 something yards.
Yeah.
And, you know, if that can be done, does that interest you or does that make you like go, why are we doing this? Or how do you feel about that when you see a swinger at 60 plus yards in a national championship?
No, it interests me for sure. Like, okay. I'd like to see, I mean, I've done a PCSL PCC championship. I did one this past August mm-hmm. and I thought it was really challenging. Grant Kunkel, like I shot with staff. I didn't do my best. Like, I, you know, match directing and shooting is really hard. Mm-hmm. But I shot okay. And Grant came and just murdered everyone. Like, he had awesome long range. Like, we were shooting steel, you know, out to 100 yards, mm-hmm. like smaller plates, like offhand braced, all this. He was basically going one for one on those and shot really good points at a match where a lot of the stuff just is not normal. Like, you wouldn't see it at a USPSA match. Much more multi-gun flavor.
Right.
Yeah, and he crushed us all. So I was really worried about him coming into this one.
Well, were you really?
Yeah.
Now, Grant's like, trained with you, right?
No.
Have you trained with Grant?
No.
Okay. I know. What was it? Who? With Chris Barrett?
Yeah, Chris.
That's what it was. Possibly. I get Chris and Grant mixed up sometimes because they both came from Steel Challenge.
Right.
And I knew one of them had trained with you for a while. So that's kind of cool. So let's talk about, you know, PCSL. That is.
I was going to say about the PCC only matches.
Yeah.
I think based on just. Like, obviously, I'd like to see the platform pushed, and I think it will be at IPSC PCC Worlds. Mm-hmm. But I think the majority of shooters just in USPSA who shoot PCC, mm-hmm. I think they're really satisfied shooting at it. Like, literally the meme, shooting rifle at a pistol match.
Right.
I think for a lot of people, that's just fun, and that's what they want to do. Like, there is a good argument for it. It's easy. It's easy to pick up. You don't have to wear it on your belt. You know, like the equipment is really nice. You just have your bag, like
right.
one magazine, and you're pretty much good to go on most stages. Mm-hmm. So there's something legitimate about that. But I do think at the highest level, like we should be able to push it further
okay.
while still allowing it to compete with pistols. Like it's obviously in its own division. It's not yes. an overall title.
So. No, I get it. Yeah. Very well said. But when did you have the idea that I want to start my own practical competition shooting league? You know, what did that look like for you when you know you're sitting back one day, mm-hmm. you know, there's all this going on with this sport, all this going on with that sport, and all of a sudden you decide I'm gonna do this myself. Walk me through your thought process of, you know, talking yourself into it, talking yourself out of it. how many times you go back and forth before you finally jumped into it. Tell me a story about what this looks like so I can understand.
I think the time that we started talking about it the most seriously was after the PCC only nationals in 2020. Mm-hmm. And at that point, like, there wasn't really that much drama in USPSA yet.
That's right.
And I was really excited because they were also kind of talking internally about doing a two-gun match. And I think the first one was 2021.
That's right.
Their two-gun match. So I think they made a huge mistake doing it PCC only with not as interesting pistol divisions, like limited and open. Doesn't make any sense at all.
Right.
In my opinion. Okay. And then not using hit factor scoring was super confusing to me. But around that time, everyone started to talk about it. And my first intention was just to try to influence USPSA to kind of go in the direction of like, hey, do hit factor and let's rewrite some multi-gun rules a little bit and allow a hit factor two gun match with 223 and mm-hmm. and maybe modernize the handgun divisions and stuff. And I was just going to push for that. And I would have never started my own league if I didn't have an opportunity to run a match at the new Cobalt Kinetics facility. Okay. Or range, not really facilities, just mm-hmm. a basically desert area with yeah. some bays on it now. But yeah, so those guys.
So did you run into a brick wall with yeah. USPSA?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
That was when.
That's fair to say, because we know, you know, you back then, you really had one person to get feedback off of. And if they didn't like that feedback, you were shut down. There was nowhere else to go.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised, like, Foley, like I'd always have good interactions with, yeah. with Mike Foley. And, I messaged him, kind of my thoughts on stuff. And I was like, hopefully USPSA will like want to go in this direction or something. And he like is probably like in a bad mood or something, but he like wrote me kind of like a not nasty, but just like not a super nice message back that was like, it sounds like you're doing your own thing, or it sounds like this is your own thing.
Right.
If you want to start your own sport, like be my guest, but you don't use our target, our name, our scoring, our this or that, our divisions, blah, blah, blah.
Just like just real matter of fact, it sounds like.
Yeah. So that was kind of I was like, oh, that's a good idea. I should do my own sport and not use your scoring or divisions. Or
that's a good idea. I like how you worded that. So he's the reason you started your own league.
Kinda, yeah.
That's where I'm at. I got a dead end and it says, you've given me the ground rules now, what not to do so I could do my own thing.
Yeah.
That's
so
wonderful.
So we made a new target and,
right.
Which is, I think outperforms what we have now by like in a lot of different areas. I think it's just way more interesting. Well, to shoot. Like,
let's talk about that for a second. Yeah. Let's dive into that. When you go to design your own target mm-hmm. and you know what's out there, you know, IDPA has what they have. You have these other sports that are out there, you know, to use. Where do you start?
So luckily I didn't have to start from nothing. Like I designed the target one night after. It might have been like during a national event in Utah or some match in Utah that happened. Might have been Hard as Hell 2-Gun. I'm not sure, but Brian Nelson was there and Vyacheslav Burris was there.
Okay.
You know him from the Czech Republic?
Yes. Yep. Yeah,
so,
most definitely.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, Vita. Yeah. Yes, most definitely.
Of course. Yeah. I have knife. He gave me a knife to give you that I had for a year, like lost in my drawer, and then I found it.
So. No, I was very proud to meet Vita. He was one of the first people I met down in Florida at one match. And I took pride because he was one of the first pairs of Hunter's HD Gold I had over the pond in another country. He was one of the first ones in that area, and I was like, I've been a big fan of Vita. There's a whole other story there altogether we can get into later, but he's good people.
So he'll be out of the two gun too that you're coming to.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Wonderful. he's a great guy. He's awesome. We hung out one night in Vegas after a SHOT Show, and he's good people. He's really good people. So but continue. Yeah. I apologize.
So Brian had for all the stuff that he's doing at the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. And he had an idea for a target that was much cheaper to manufacture and easier to transport and everything. So it was basically like the top half of a metric, mm-hmm. And cut off like halfway through the A zone. So basically just like chest up. But it had like a T zone in the head, mm-hmm. Instead of just a credit card. And, so he kind of like had that idea and showed it to me and everything. And like, we really like the classic target. Obviously, it's like it's I think a little more interesting than the metric. Mm-hmm. Metric's just too big. Like okay. It doesn't demand a good accuracy standard. And so, but we like the head box. Like it offers a lot more interesting scoring opportunities and presentations with no shoots and hardcover and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So we just started drawing with Sharpie, and I drew something similar to what we have now. We did a bunch of iterations on the classic target, mm-hmm. just on the white side, and like drew new lines on it and was like, what if we do the head here and like cut out the shoulders like that? And eventually we ended up where we are now with the K-Zone target.
Wow. Did you, how did you get something like that printed? Cause I guess there's people to reach out to that already do it. Is there anybody that you wanted to exclusively do your printing for you or anything?
I'm talking to a few bigger target companies now.
Okay.
To get it mass produced and widely available.
Right.
But for the batches that I've done so far, I bought a die from a cardboard company who hadn't done targets before. They were just a packaging company.
Right.
By about 5,000 the first time, 10,000 the second time. And I'm going through those, getting them out there, like getting them shipped out for people now. Cool. So
yeah, dies aren't cheap.
Yeah.
Cause I looked at getting my own boxes made at one time and I was like going, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
So, and that's back when I was first getting the company started, because I didn't have all the income to put back into the Hunter's HD Go like I do now, because you start talking about dies and different shapes and you change one thing and it's a whole new die. So it's a whole other process altogether. So what, a lot of you posted some stuff the other day, about your kind of rule set, mm-hmm. and where you're at, and you kind of just opened it up for anybody to do, right? Are you looking, because I'm looking at this and I see a rule set. I see, how you're putting it out there, but I don't know anybody can just pick this up and do it. So what's the goal right now? Just to get more people interested? Are we selling targets, trying to pay the dies off? Where are we at with that? What does that look like trying to, because there's no, are you looking to get clubs affiliated in the future, kind of like USPSA does?
Yeah, in the future, I'd like to have like a nice affiliation package that actually benefits them, like maybe a huge discount with Targets USA and
nice.
Like bundles of targets and that kind of thing. But
okay.
I don't really care about small affiliation fees now. Like it, in my opinion, where we're at, like I'm really fortunate to be in a spot where I can put a little bit of capital up front to get everything going.
Okay.
And run big championships at a loss for a little bit, like buy the die, buy what I need to, the targets, everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to ever charge an affiliate fee at the local level, like level one level. Like I want at some point the league to be big enough where if you want to make this a thing that you do over the shooting season,
mm-hmm.
you'll have incentives to go to different matches around the country that are sanctioned,
mm-hmm.
and that are like a little bigger than a level one match, like maybe a state championship, like if you kind of think of like state or regional championship, mm-hmm. one day major kind of thing,
right.
that USPSA runs now.
Yep.
That size of match, I want it to actually matter for a season. So like
okay.
you collect points or this or that.
Yeah, because you
towards
picked,
a goal.
You end. Picked yeah. a hell of a time to start a shooting sports because COVID happened.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because what we didn't know was going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where were you shocked how expensive it was to actually put on a match? And everything
no,
that was involved
really.
With it. Okay.
I mean, yeah, like it once you add up all the little costs, like, oh yeah, like I don't want to be stingy at all. And eventually I want to get to the point where I can give back way more when the matches are totally full. And I can just give back money to staff and have more prizes back to shooters and everything. But right now we're doing pretty good, like coming close to the break even point.
Nice.
But I'm still losing a little bit on mm-hmm. these matches that I'm running, because I don't want to sacrifice things like doing a free awards lunch for everybody at mm-hmm. the match and and taking care of staff housing and that kind of stuff, and giving prize money back where I can. I don't want to lose that.
No, I get it. Are you finding it pretty easy to find staff out there in the Utah area? There's so many shooters in Arizona, and
yeah.
I haven't been out there for a lot, but I hear the stories. Arizona is just a mecca for shooters, and then there's so much going on around St. George and everything else. Are you finding it easy to staff stuff like that?
Yeah. I do need staff for Hard as Hell pretty bad.
Right.
But for the two gun, I have more than enough. And with it not being totally full, it's been extremely comfortable the last few majors that we've ran.
Right.
I have awesome help, like a lot of guys from Arizona, like you said, and then some military guys, like even from guys come from Wyoming.
Right.
Even a couple come from all the way from Wisconsin, I think.
Right.
And then they like drive in and staff it, and maybe Minnesota or Michigan or something. I forget. Sorry, guys. Yeah, and then Vegas too. Like, there's a military base there, and you get some guys in from there. But
so, are you pulling in a lot of people different than your average USPSA three gun shooters that you usually always see?
Yeah,
that's cool.
A lot of people at the PCSL matches that we've ran have been either first time competitors or first time like action shooting sport competitors. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them like from military background or from just like tactical, you know, enthusiast background who haven't tried shooting on a timer yet. And a lot of these guys like are really safe actually, and like are very interested in learning like what the procedures are.
Right.
I think there's just a lot of things about USPSA or three gun, maybe three gun, I think more USPSA that like that turn them off to competing. It's like so that's kind of what I've tried to do is my approach to PCSL. Well, one of them is to remove every needless point of friction that would prevent someone from enjoying their time at the sport.
Okay. Give me an explanation of a couple of examples of that.
So like outdated divisions that don't cater to, you know, a normal hobbyist equipment.
Okay.
Or like very weird, arbitrary long gun rules.
Okay.
Bagging and unbagging and that kind of thing.
Right.
Or yeah, like what kind of targets you're going to engage. Like, so from a multi-gun perspective, three gun is already really equipment prohibitive.
That's correct.
But I consider it more like four gun because the rifle, you need a long range and a short range load. You need a long range and short range optic. You need a long range and short range stance and bipod or bag or whatever, or brace on a support,
right?
Like shooting position, like everything is fundamentally different about it. So like long range rifle is actually the key in three gun. Like a lot of people think it's a shotgun race, blah, blah, blah. Like, cause hosing targets is easy,
right?
But like at the top level matches are won and lost on long range rifle. So if we can remove that point of friction, and, so I did that just by, making a maximum target distance of 200 yards and minimum target size 8 MOA. Okay. So I don't even have any steel that's a 16 inch wide plate.
Right.
So my C zones are 12 inch across. So those can go out to 150 yards. And then we have 8 inch, 6 inch, 4 inch. A clay is like 4 inch. So you could put a clay at 50. That could be a hard shot.
Yes.
You could put a 6 inch square. That's what we do a lot at 75, 8 inch at 100. All these targets are doable with PCC. And any like 55 grain hoser load, kind of pretty much any barrel. So like just bring what you have, and you don't even need a magnified optic if your eyes are good. Like it might help in certain cases, but yeah, that kind of thing is, yeah, that's another example.
That's cool.
Just make it accessible.
So is shotgun used at all?
So we're running the PCSL rule set for Hard as Hell multi-gun.
Okay.
And that's kind of an example of how the target performs way better for three gun. Like, instead of two anywhere or one alpha, where you have that huge alpha zone.
That's right.
We're doing two anywhere or one K, where K is like similar to the upper credit card.
That's right.
But a little bigger. But that means you're not going to get that lucky alpha mic as you're like just blazing through targets.
Right.
And getting full points for it without a penalty. So if you're going to do that one shot on target, you really do have to get your center headshot.
Right.
And yes, but we're still doing time plus scoring and everything like normal.
Right.
So Hard as Hell is kind of like a demo of, you can take the PCSL target and our rule set, and and we have some interesting divisions, and you can run your three gun matches with this rule set as you like. Like anywhere in the country, you can adopt it. You can even change it, whatever you like. But in my opinion, to be a real premier shooting sport, I think two gun is where we need to go.
Okay.
And one gun kind of like filters into two gun. As far as like the pistol divisions line up exactly, and you just add your AR-15 or PCC, and yeah, but two guns still extremely accessible. And when you have hit factor and you have stage design that's similar to USPSA, it's like almost like two stages like this back to back.
Right.
But with an extra element of like some mid to long range with a braced rifle position, that kind of thing.
Right.
All these extra elements make it really complicated. More than just shooting a USPSA pistol stage and a USPSA rifle stage back to back. Together, it's a lot more than that, and it's much easier to make mistakes. So that adds another level of difficulty that, but that doesn't change the accessibility at all, but it makes it more, in my opinion, like what the premier shooting sport in the world should be, because everyone can shoot it. Like, you don't need a shotgun. Just everyone's got a rifle and a pistol, and, right. and you can participate.
Is that your goal?
Yes.
Cool. To be the best.
Yeah. I think like that from the ground up, from starting the league, I designed it as something that could eventually be the premier shooting sport in the world.
That is awesome.
The action shooting sport.
That's wonderful. Premier action shooting sport. How does, are you doing this pretty much by yourself as far as you heading everything up? But what is it? What is your,
so far? Yeah.
What's your tree look like? You have one at all?
So, I'm talking right now to a couple people to like distribute some responsibilities, especially now that we got targets and like other clubs interfacing and like all this stuff that, that's, pretty much, what I need to delegate. But as far as the major matches like that we've put on, it's basically all me, like as far as like idea wise.
Does your anxiety get higher sometimes preparing for a match than it does preparing for nationals? So there's so much responsibility there, because you're not trying to entertain yourself at this point, you're trying to entertain the masses. And that's a big responsibility.
The first one we did in April of 2021, that was the most anxious of that one. But they've gotten a lot easier since then, because we kind of found our formula.
Cool.
So
what, that leads me to a great question. What was the first aha moments of, oh, that's messed up?
What do you mean? What's messed up?
Like what you were doing in a process of your match? Like, oh, this is not good. We don't need to do this anymore. Was there any of those moments that you had after your very first one in April of 2021? Like, let's don't do that again.
I tried way too hard to involve too many companies and sponsors at the first match. We did get a huge prize table at that one, but I did it too much to the point where it slightly detracted from the match experience. And a little bit of that was because we unfortunately had a bunch of brand new bays cut that didn't get watered down enough by natural rain. So we had a lot of dust. Like, not only was it really windy, but it was amplified by the fact that all the fresh dirt from the base being blown around. So there were a few points in the match where it was almost like a whiteout blizzard, but
reminds me of what was that, 2019 or 20 something? Yeah, 2019 nationals in Utah.
Yeah, it's something. Honestly, it might have been a little worse than that.
It was like worse than that on the final day.
Like, if you're in the parking lot,
that was bad.
You couldn't see more than 3 feet in front of you from the dust going. Like,
holy cow!
And we didn't lose a single target off our sticks. Like,
wow,
that's how well they performed. So I was pretty happy about that. But
it's less resistance based on being smaller targets.
Yeah. And the heads are cut out. So you have like four corners of pass through. And if you do a double stack, there's actually a gap in between, unless you put them really close, but there's more of a gap in between. So it's not like a big shield. But yeah, I put stage guns on like five stages out of in the match, not for score. I don't like stage guns for score.
Okay.
But it was basically like, you're going to shoot, like lay down and shoot this bolt action gun on these targets. And then you get up and shoot your stage with a new timer. Or we had a Voodoo 22, awesome guns. And
yes, great they company. Are.
Yeah. Yes. So we had a plate rack at 50 yards and you got eight rounds in it. It was a KYL plate rack. And then you would shoot that and then get up and shoot your two gun stage. And obviously with the dust, like you couldn't even see the plate rack if a gust of wind picked up. So it, it like caused some delays. So I've kind of moved back to putting sponsors equipment in either like a live fire bay or doing like last time we did a Cobalt Kinetics and JP5 side stage that was scored separately. So it was scheduled in the rotation, but it wasn't part of your match score.
Right. If you had any issues where you made a mistake in the side stages, did it kick you out of the main match or just the side stage? Okay, good. No. Yeah, I think USPSA,
we had a
lot of people asking questions about that at the last nationals we had. So come to me. I don't want to shoot that just in case if something goes wrong. I don't want to lose the entire match.
That's, we had an APA bolt action 308 with like a hairpin trigger.
Ooh.
And so people would get behind it and like, okay, ready, bang, whoops, like we didn't even give you the beep yet.
Yeah, when they're not used to those beautiful triggers they put in some of those hunting rifles, it's a different right, experience.
Like 2 ounces.
Yeah. It's, okay. It's, oh, I've got one. It's a set trigger at 0.2 ounces that that Steyr Arms made for my hunting rifle. And it's just,
yeah.
I love it because when I take a deep breath and let it out and pull it, the game is down. So it's good stuff. And the gun doesn't move. So I'm very familiar with the set triggers. Classification system. Is that in your future?
Yeah, definitely.
Wow.
Something I'm going to work on this off season, this winter.
Yeah.
I did a podcast with a few guys. It's called Clone Incorrect.
Nice.
I'd never heard of it before. They had Ben Steger on.
Okay.
It's kind of like a, yeah, it's a really good crowd. They're younger guys. They're not all from the competition world. Some of them shoot carry optics.
Oh, that's exciting. PSA,
but they're very interested in seeing something new come up. Mm-hmm. So it was great talking to them. They had a lot of good ideas. Classification system.
Yeah.
So we talked about it a lot on there. I would really, really like to get to the point where we can do an ELO based system.
All right.
So,
educate me on ELO.
It's something that chess uses and a lot of video games use in a ladder ranking, but basically like you start out at a certain level and then based on your relative performance, you get bumped up or down, on a number. So
you can go down.
You can go down. Yeah. Say you start at like 1500.
Yeah.
And everyone's at 1500 to start.
Okay.
We all shoot a match. We get ranked. Like the guys who do the best, they get, maybe 100 points added.
Yeah.
The guys who do the worst, maybe a little less, like 25 points subtracted, that kind of thing. Now we have a distribution. Now, if we shoot together and I'm 1500 and you're 1550, and I beat you, I'll actually get a little more because you're ranked better than me.
Right.
And if I beat someone who's ranked below me, like 1400, I actually lose more because I've lost to someone who's technically ranked worse than me.
Yeah.
The problem with doing ELO with shooting sports is that there's not enough data constantly coming in. So you have to have a lot of matches of data to accurately classify people using only that.
Okay.
But
that's kind of where your baseline's wanting to be in your thought process.
I want to eventually get to there or do kind of like a hybrid system.
Yeah.
Because if we just do only ELO, the only way for people at local levels to get an accurate score is if like the top guys of their club go to the major championship, shoot against each other. They only have one data point. Then they go back to their local clubs and then you get compared like that. So it's pretty low confidence ranking.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some kind of classifier system plus a point system combined together will eventually be the best thing that we do. So I want to start that. with the simpler classifier system.
But that's kind of how you got started to bring it back from the beginning about video games. That same kind of classification. So it brings it back to that again.
Every second you have hundreds of video game matches and finishing and new data going to the pool. So
exactly.
It's not even fair. Like their rankings are so, or chess, for example, Blitz Chess Online, it's so fast that the ELO systems are very, very accurate at judging your skill level, but in shooting it would not be.
Right.
Even if you backtrack a whole bunch, like in USPSA, if you applied it to USPSA, in my opinion, if you backtracked it a whole bunch, skill levels are changing so much every nationals that you don't have enough resolution in the data to keep it accurate through the whole year.
Wow. No, I like it. I like it a lot. It make it a lot easier to follow online what people are doing at other matches, which why it is so important to get other ranges involved with this.
Right.
That makes more sense to me now while we're opening up other ranges to do that without any kind of affiliation, because their affiliation is more needed now because just I need data. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So I'll give you a breakdown of what I'm thinking now as far as like classifier. So
please.
This is like not as fully fleshed out. So this is kind of like a base thing I'm going to look at maybe after the matches that we run this year, but I'd like to do a set of six classifiers in three different categories, if you will. So like ones that stress like manipulations, ones that stress movement, and ones that stress marksmanship, something like that.
Okay.
So if we have 6, 6, and 6, so 18 total, and a classifier match can be a club picks any two from each category and runs those classifiers.
Mm-hmm.
And then those six will get you classified. But in order to get classified, you need two from each category. So it's not just a bunch of like this 7-round one, like stand and shoot. Mm-hmm. And if I'm good at that, I can eventually hit four of them and get GM.
Right.
So that'll be the first little tweak.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I'd like to do is that at a local club classifier match like that, you can be ranked D to A.
Okay.
Just right off the bat at your local match. Mm-hmm. In order to get master, you have to participate in a sanctioned kind of sectional, like maybe a one day major.
Like I like that.
Yeah, so like that. You have to be A class, mm-hmm. go to one of those and then perform well within A class.
Yep.
And then get bumped up.
Yep. Just like doing karate, but all of a sudden you have your actual, you have an event where you go try to get your next level.
And this isn't going to a major championship or anything. It's probably like just one club in your state is going to have one of these over the year. So go to that one, or you go to multiple and try multiple. And then out of all the sanctioned matches in the country, I'd like to have a few that are like, well, definitely like an East and West Coast championship.
Okay.
And then many kind of like area level matches. So like mm-hmm. just under the national championship level. These are the matches that you go and earn points at. Maybe national championship gives you the most weighted, mm-hmm. the most, and areas weighted second most, then the sectional level third most. But you go around and collect points over the season. Mm-hmm. And then the top, whatever it is, 50, 100 shooters that have collected the most points. And mm-hmm. it would be evenly weighted. So like your points from one nationals, three areas, and maybe like three sectionals, something like that, or one nationals, three areas only.
Okay.
Something like that. Out of all the people who've shot those, the top point earners become grandmaster for the next season.
Okay.
And they're listed in order, like 1 to 50 or 1 to 100. So grandmaster actually means something above just a percentage.
Yeah, because it sounds like you can lose that title as well.
Right. So it would only stay for your season, mm-hmm. and it would be reset the next season.
So you can actually say a 2-time grandmaster.
Right.
Or 3-time grandmaster instead of saying
and grandmaster,
I'm too. Done. And consecutive grandmasters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I like it.
Once you earn the title of grandmaster, mm-hmm. you'd have to perform the season as a grandmaster to keep it for the next for the next year.
Wow. That's intriguing. I'm proud of you. That's huge. I like that. That's pretty cool. Have you had any, what's the scariest you've been with doing all this besides doing your first match? Has there been any like things that really caught you off guard that made you go, oh, I didn't know about that at all, or didn't see that coming? Has there been any of those moments yet?
No, nothing really sticks out. Like I've definitely made a few mistakes in stage design.
Yeah.
Where, for example, I put a target out that was a little too difficult, where most of the match elected not to shoot at it. They just burned around at it.
Okay.
And took the mic. There's little things like that really annoy me. Like, I should have known that was a little too difficult. And like,
gamer's going to game.
Yeah. I mean, I should know that, right?
Like, exactly. Looking at you're a gamer yourself.
So, yeah, but nothing crazy. I mean, the biggest thing is just I've been just like hard on myself with how much time I'm putting into stuff like the website and rule book. Like mm-hmm. there's just so many things going on at once now that
a lot.
Are not not like they're constantly evolving as I talk to people and get more information, more match experience and stuff. So I wish I had more time to do all that.
Do you continue to defend your title with USPSA as long as you can?
We'll see. I think USPSA is like, it's kind of in a low right now.
It is.
But I think within the org, things are already turning around and we're not going to see the effects of that for bit longer.
That's right.
So I think USPSA is actually going to turn out fine from all this drama. It's really going to depend. I'm most interested for me competition wise.
Yeah.
In PCC World Shoot, like I want to go to that and be on the US team and do as well as I can there. And other than that, like if nationals continue to be similar to this level, like in my opinion, Dragon's Cup was a much, much better match than this, Dragon's Cup 2.0.
Right.
So I would really like to see USPSA take their national level matches more seriously and mm-hmm. go out and find like, hire Billy, hire someone who's like really into stage design, just kick a few $1,000 their way to come and like supervise the builds and design half the match.
We got a president right now. So that's Yeeman's responsibility.
So yeah.
It's time for, to be able to reach out and get that done. So that's huge.
Yeah. So there's no reason to have dumbed down stages, even at a PCC production match. Mm-hmm. You could have way more interesting stages. It just takes time and effort.
Right.
And, I feel like, that's something that should definitely be done. But I would be way more interested in shooting high-level USPSA events if they were all really well-designed like Dragon's Cup was.
But it definitely means something to you to be a 6-time consecutive Yeah. The only national champion in PCC.
Yeah, it does.
So I know it has to. So
at this point, you're torn. Yeah, like I would much rather put my time into growing PCSL.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, like, from my own experience, like shooting the two gun match, just like removing myself from the match director position, mm-hmm. and just shooting, what does this sport feel like? What does Hit Factor two gun feel like with an AR and pistol in these divisions?
Right.
And it's just so much more interesting. And I can see how high the skill ceiling is for that. Like, it's kind of hard to explain until you come experience it. Mm-hmm. But one way to look at it is, like, you know how in USPSA, we're eventually especially the pistol guys, like,
yes,
open guys, they're fighting over the finest bits of efficiency,
yeah,
here and there to cut off the milliseconds, right, and
we just saw it in production.
Right.
It came down to the last stage between Nils and Jacob. I mean, it came down to the last stage.
Right.
I'm just trying to find that edge.
Yeah. So especially in handgun divisions, not like PCC is still, I think there's not a super tight group at the top that's like trading stage wins back and forth.
Right.
In Europe, I think a few guys are ahead of us here in PCC. But
really,
okay. Yeah. But as far as the pistol stuff goes, like that kind of nuanced stage design, where the things like a call of like a, you know, overlay that Charlie, like make sure it's not an alpha, like where that can make or break your match.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of all goes away when you add a second gun in. It becomes way more like three gun, where it's so hard to do everything perfectly on the stage.
Right.
You don't have stages like this 7-round one or like a little classifier here and there where, like, you know, the technically perfect way to shoot it.
Right.
You just will never reach that. So like, I'm really excited to see top two gun shooters kind of make names for themselves, and mm-hmm. then fight and see where the skill ceiling can actually be pushed. And that's another reason why I really like the K-zone target, because we're going to start pushing our called K-zone shots, like how confidently we can do those at speed,
mm-hmm.
probably out with the rifle like 20-25 yards, where it actually is an advantage for you than double tapping alpha.
Right.
And like things like shooting K zones on the move and just shooting a tighter A zone on the move and all this stuff is, mm-hmm. And when you have small stages in the match at like the 25-second range and then longer stages in like the 60-second range.
Right.
Yeah. It's just too hard to do everything perfectly. So it adds another level, to the sport, where, more similar to three gun, it's about like doing everything pretty well and being smooth and not making any huge mistakes.
Right.
But with more of a potential for shooting perfectly than you can in three gun, for sure.
That sounds exciting. Well, I'm glad to be helping be a part of that where I can. So whatever you need from me, you got to let me know. But anything we left off that you want to discuss about, you know, PCSL?
Just to get people some more info, maybe the divisions,
please.
And if you're interested in those two, like the one gun.
Yeah.
One. So, we can talk about two gun first. So I'm keeping it simple. That's mm-hmm. accessible and simple is like one of the main things that I want to keep. So we have, no power factor. So it's just minor scoring with both rifle and handgun.
Okay.
And again, keep in mind the 200 yard maximum rule. So like, a lot of that goes back into it. So, the two divisions are competition division and practical division, just like the league's name, practical competition shooting league.
Yeah.
Competition division is, what you'd think of as open. So like open minor,
mm-hmm.
with a open rifle, everything except bipods and bags.
You got a lot of gun manufacturers excited about that.
Yeah.
Good.
I think so.
Continue.
Yeah. So, so open minor, like you guys know, and, then practical division is the new one, really exciting division. I really like how it turned out, but, on the rifle, there's no optics restrictions. That's not what, like, and you can have a LPVO with offset dot, but you can't have a dedicated muzzle brake. So like basically the way it's written is, it can't have recoil reduction baffles where you can like see through the baffle from the side.
Mm-hmm.
So externally visible baffle for the primary purpose of reducing recoil. So that means that like hybrid devices like the Surefire War Comp or Cobalt, RCB, or like the pinhole, like, Knight's Armament,
yeah,
suppressor adapter, those are okay. Like we want to encourage like hybrid devices that like reduce concussion and help out.
Got it.
So that's the muzzle. You can't have lightened bolt carrier groups. It has to be full mass.
Okay.
Basically factory. And then the other thing is you're loading your mag to 30 plus one. So that's basically it. Like, that's a practical rifle. Okay. Practical handgun, you can think of like limited optics. So 2011 with red dot, with magwell, with light, whatever you want. You just can't use the gas for recoil reduction.
Okay.
So there's no double single, no nothing. It's just limited optics. So that's the practical handgun. So those are the two gun divisions.
Nice.
Very different. Handgun and rifle are very different in both of them. Makes it really interesting. PCC is loud, but it puts you in competition division.
Right.
And then for the one gun division, same handguns as those, but we added factory, which is your iron sight division. So,
okay.
It's basically, you're going to load to 17. We decided to go with, mag load to limits instead of length. So we don't have to do equipment checks and stuff. And you don't have a guy with like a TAC Timmy Glock base pad that gets effectively DQ'd. Even though he can only hold 22 plus one when you have an STI mag that can hold 24.
Right.
I don't like that at all. So, yeah, so the factory is basically limited 17 iron sights only. The magwell is the one thing that I'm not sure about yet. Might be carry size magwell, might be no magwell. But I think I'm probably just going to go with, you can use magwell in it.
Cool. Cause when you first posted a lot of this stuff out there on social media back in, you know, not too long ago, blew up.
Yeah.
It blew up, and you went in there answering everybody's questions in detail. Were you overwhelmed with that when it happened, or were you kind of prepared for that? Because you had people on there that were very positive.
Yeah.
And you had people on there that were trying to, just like anybody else does, people don't know when they try to not tear it apart, but, you know, nitpick everything. And I read all the comments. I was like going, holy cow, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, are you at home where your head's blowing up like, oh my gosh, it's not that hard. You're making it harder than it is kind of thing. Or are you calm, just like replying and making it, you know?
Yeah, no, I love it. Cause a lot of the comments that are very well thought out. And like, if I've thought hard about their points before, then I feel, like, well, it's nice for me to reiterate my argument, like the one that I made to myself in my head when I made the decision. Like, here's my argument. Here's why I've thought of your point and why I went in this direction.
Right.
So that just gives me, more help making my ideas more solid.
Right.
And then, if there's anything new that I haven't thought of,
right.
Then that's super helpful to me too. And I have to like put that aside and be like, I got to make a decision right. about this. And, yeah, but it goes back to all the decisions I make come from basically the vision of it being possible for this to be the premier shooting sport, the most accessible shooting sport, frictionless participation that I can make it, and also culture. So I want to promote a culture of not cheating, like honesty, people policing themselves as a shooting community. So like a lot of people were saying like, oh, you can't have 17 plus one or 21 plus one because it's too hard for ROs to count the rounds there. So like, I just don't think ROs should be counting rounds in that case. Like, let's say you're at a major championship. Once you've shot a squad through your stage, you know where people could cheat to get to 18 or 22.
Right.
And plus, this isn't production where it matters a ton. Like, you're super limited on rounds. Like on a 32 round stage, even if you're shooting 17, you're going to reload once. And if you're shooting 21, you're going to reload once anyway. And if it's safer to reload twice, like with the 17 round mag, like you're just going to do that. It's not worth the risk to get that one or two extra rounds in your mag and hope that nobody noticed you at the penalty of your integrity or your reputation.
Right.
You know, I just don't think that's going to be an issue at the highest level. At local levels, possibly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But honestly, if there's no prizes or points assigned, I'm not super worried about it. I hope that people, like within, you know, their local groups, like just would like to be more honest and,
right.
And, yeah, just like tell each other, you know, don't do that.
No. And I get that because one thing I was proud of, and I say proud, maybe not right, but what I admired is when you were seeing all these comments, you'd say, hey, you know, this sport is this, USPSA is that,
right.
You know, don't you're not trying to destroy anything, you're trying to add to it, which is really cool.
The amount of people commenting that are like, you know, as a USPSA guy, like I feel like you should have this so I can go. I'm like, this is not a port of USPSA.
Right.
Like I'm not just making a new USPSA that all USPSA shooters right. come to. None of my divisions match up 1-to-1.
Right.
None of the rules really match up. The target's not the same.
That's right.
It's totally new. And I don't think a lot of people appreciate that as much because they're used to something.
Right.
And they're like, well, I have this gun. Like, why can't I shoot it in your league? Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
There's a sport for you.
Right.
Because I've talked to some people that have been around for a long time in the shooting sports. Because I was interested, like, with ups and downs of USPSA and other organizations, you know, this is almost a, you know, history repeats itself. We agree with that. But this is almost the same kind of times that USPSA is in that happened a long time ago mm-hmm. when IDPA was created.
Okay.
And it became its own thing, very successful.
Right.
And now we're going through all these changes again. And there's another sport coming up again. So that's a good thing
because right.
it brings more people to shooting. And if you like IDPA, this is for you. This is what it's for. USPSA, that's great. But now there's fixed to be another option. Mm-hmm. And I think it's based on history repeating itself, it's kind of the same thing that happened a long time ago, based on I've been told by people that's been around this a lot longer than me and you for that matter. So people have seen this happen before where it's time for something else to, you know, pop out there. And it's not, you know, I think that's a good thing because there's a lot of new shooters that are out there. And there's some people that don't want to come to the competition world of USPSA because it is very detailed, aggressive. And arguably right now, some of the best shooters in the world are there and they don't want to be competing against that. So if there's something new coming in with new standards, new rule sets, new ways to make it easier for people to get into that are in military, police, and all these other people that aren't doing regular competition, I think it's huge. So it should be exciting times. I think it is. I'm excited. I mean, I like anything to do. I support all the shooting sports. You know that. I don't keep my name just wrapped around one situation and, you know, live and die by that. I'm in, I think, 8-9 different shooting sports now. So that's the more the merrier, and you know, the water's warm. Let's come in there and make it happen while there's a lot of shooters out there. So I'm excited. Anything else?
No, I think we're,
man, we covered a lot. No, yeah. Thanks for sitting down with me because I wanted to touch base with a little bit how you got started and everything else and going through all those things. Who's your main sponsors that are really, you know, stepping up to be there with PCSL?
So we're working really closely with Surefire,
yes.
IWI,
okay.
Targets USA, Jason from Targets USA has
yes.
been awesome.
He's a great individual.
Like he, basically the first match we ran in April wouldn't have happened without him. Like he came and was working with me, under like headlamps at night to put the stages on the ground. Yep.
He was there for the very first Dragons Cup, helping the same way.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's awesome. So, yep. And always like tries to get us his new stuff and yep. get whatever equipment out that we need for the match.
Are you using his targets that go 16 different ways to Sunday?
I haven't put the Holy Monkey in yet.
I'm glad you knew. I forgot the name. So I'm glad you said it.
maybe one day, but because it takes two swingers to put one together and I'm short on swingers. Okay. As it is, the steel swingers that he's got, I put those all over the place.
Right.
We did one at 50 yards behind some no-shoot plates. So a steel swinging rifle target, like a little 6-inch plate.
Yeah.
Yeah. From a brace position, like it was pretty good. And Black Rifle Coffee, they're big supporters, first few on, and Kirk's going to be out there again. And in November,
nice.
Brewing coffee for everyone in the morning. So
very, very cool.
And then, there's a lot more. We're working with Gun Butter this coming up match. So like everyone's going to get oil at the range, which will help with the dust.
Hopefully it's not as dusty where everybody needs it. Yes.
Yeah. So, and Supervel Ammo.
Right.
They've been supporting me and Lynn for the past year.
Yep.
And Mike is super on board with PCSL.
Mike's on point where he needs to be. He's an awesome individual as well.
Yeah. And of course, Cobalt Kinetics, like for the range and the opportunity. And Aaron from Cobalt, he's awesome and has been really supportive too.
I look forward to meeting a lot of those guys in November when I'm there. So I'm excited about coming. So it's going to be fun. So, well, sweet. How can people get in touch with you if they have questions or email you, Instagram? What's that look like for you?
I can't stand Instagram. I think we need to find a different, but I hate just scrolling with like two ads and one person you follow. So, but it's still somewhere where I reply to people. I prefer if you email me at info@pcsleague.com if it's anything related to the league.
Okay.
If you want to get in touch with me personally, at Maximundi on Instagram is probably still the best.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So.
Well, good deal. Well, you know, we're in exciting times. It's a new year coming up. We're all, you know, ready to go. New things are happening around the shooting sports every day. But if you have any questions for Max, you know, if you don't have his direct information, feel free to email me at info@huntershdgold.com, and I'll be reaching out to him myself to make sure he gets the messages. But make sure you like the podcast, share it, leave a 5-star review. Let's help keep promoting the shooting sports throughout the United States and the world, and just keep making things happier. Max, thanks again for sitting down with me. And until next time, we'll see you at the range soon. Thanks, Max.
Again, Mike.
Oh, you're very welcome.